What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Please welcome to the stage, he's a Gen Z pundit, ripping conservatives a new A. It's Adam Hochler.
Hey. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Are you not allowed to cuss? What's ripping them a new A?
Oh, we can say all the words.
Okay.
And often do. There's a couple we have said and then have been told to stop saying.
Like what?
There's a couple.
I can think of a few.
You can think of a few.
Yeah.
Think of a few and just know it's probably...
Oh, is it the word where it's like...
Yep.
Okay, yeah, I got it.
So Donald Trump declared mission accomplished in Iran this week with a beautiful post. As you reflect on the ups and downs of the war, how proud are you of Trump for finally getting it done?
He's gotten it done like 30 times thus far. Mm-hmm. We're day 180 into this, 180 days into this war that was supposed to be 4 to 6 weeks long, and we've gotten zero of our objectives achieved. We were supposed to denuclearize them. That didn't happen. We were supposed to regime change them. That didn't happen. They said we were going to destroy their missiles. That didn't happen. Trump is still hiding in carts in Turkey because his life is in danger. And then finally, they said we would stop their ability to fund proxies in the region. That didn't work either. So the war is failing. It's absolutely awful, and it's costing us a lot of money.
Yeah, I don't care for the war either.
War is bad.
I think it was a huge mistake. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal ran an op-ed that called J.D. Vance the GOP's Obama. It's obviously getting quite a response from the crowd. I'm trying to think of all the ways in which that's true. Are there any in particular that jump out to you that make the comparison so apt? It's hard to pick because it's so apt in so many ways in which they are alike.
Well, Obama has charisma.
Mm-hmm.
J.D. Vance has none.
He has none.
Zero riz, as my generation says. I think Obama is a liberal and he believes in liberal values. J.D. Vance seems to be the antithesis of that. Obama has nothing to do with Peter Thiel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't see it. What's the comparison?
They both drew on their family background, which was, you know, they both experienced sort of difficult parts of their childhood, and from that built an idea of what they believed they should be doing in public life. Obama's was about knitting a nation together based on a shared set of values that recognize that people of different faiths and politics can ultimately find common ground rooted in a shared set of ideas about what America is, and that to love America is to understand it is always changing, and our job is to figure out the best way to be part of that change. J.D. Vance, opposite. He experienced a lot of hardship when he was a kid, and then developed a theory of what caused all of that, wrote it down, then said, actually, no, forget that. We're going to do the Trump thing for a while and the tech thing. I mean, like, it's just, he just is a, I don't know. There's no real way to tell a story. Like, J.D. Vance does not have a coherent story he tells from what led from his youth to where he is now, in part because what he says now is completely different than what he would have said 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah. And I think that Obama doesn't have that type of massive change in ideology over a small period of time. So I don't know. I don't get the comparison.
Yeah. It's interesting about charisma because it's a hard thing to define, but we know it when we see it. I've always thought that there's a curve, which is basically there's a line, right? People have a certain amount of personality and they have a certain amount of charisma. And if you have more personality than charisma, you're boorish and deeply annoying.
That's fair.
If you have kind of less personality than charisma, you're cool and aloof and like kind of people want, it's like you have real charm and people kind of want to like kind of get to know you because you seem kind of cool, right? And then, but I don't really know what happens when you go into negative charisma, right? Like what, it's like mathematically undefined. It's sort of like the Riemann hypothesis. It's like, we don't know what happened. Like, it's like you have to like get to the other side of the chart, and it leads to a lot of strange implications, you know?
He's like a black hole of charisma. And you know what I like about it, to keep your science analogies going? I like how hard he tries when he's on stage.
Yeah.
He'll go to Ohio. He'll go to his own home state and try to tell a joke, and the audience will just sit there and not laugh. Kind of like the first joke that you tried at the very, the very beginning.
And several others throughout the fucking monologue.
Yeah. But at least you picked it up. This guy is consistently bombing on stage with the same jokes over and over.
So, first of all, you started a YouTube channel when you were 9 years old. Is that right?
Yeah.
And it was devoted to Minecraft?
And Call of Duty.
Call of Duty. Was it a subtle, slow transition to politics where it slowly crept in, or was there one day where it was Minecraft and the next day it was politics?
You know, it was slow and subtle. It was over the course of a decade. I used to get home from school and make these Minecraft videos, and I got really solid at editing in the process. I remember in high school, I privated all of those videos because I wanted to get girls. I didn't want to be like the Minecraft guy. This is the guy that's always playing Minecraft.
Oh, yeah.
And then I graduated. And, you know, I realized there were Trump rallies happening two states over. I was in Indiana. There were caucuses happening in Iowa. So I started to travel to these Trump rallies and have respectful conversations with them, just talking to them about politics. And I realized there's a lot of mileage that can happen if you just have conversation with the other side and don't act overtly condescending. So that kind of built my style and built my flow to where I am. So to answer your question, gradual.
That's it. Well, we have two different sort of, yours is a kind of non-condescending disagreement. I go for condescending agreement.
Okay.
That's sort of my approach generally to this show. You also, though, are like, a lot of what people would see of you is not sort of whatever, conversations in which, you know, if you're on CNN, you're kind of in the rough and tumble. It's not about hearing from it's a fight. Like there was a famous moment where Scott Jennings got quite upset with you for get your finger out of my, didn't he say, what did he say? Out of my fucking face?
Get your finger out of my fucking face. That's what he said.
Right. And I watched the video.
Sorry, I had to get that out with my heart.
Your finger wasn't that close to his face, was it? He was quite mad at you.
You want to know the real story?
Yeah.
It's that, you know what? Be careful who you pretend to be. Because he was pretending to be somebody who could keep up with this war, keep defending this war, and it turned out he cracked under the pressure. I was debating him week after week after week since the war began. You know, he was defending it 10 days in, the Iran war. He was defending it 30 days in. He was defending it 40, 50 days in. And, you know, Trump said there was going to be a 4 to 6 week timeline. So about 90 days in, we've been on a bunch of panels, and he just can't answer any questions about the war anymore. What concessions have we gotten? He doesn't know. Are we any closer to the nuclear material being removed? He doesn't know. So there's this dynamic on some of these panels where he kind of plays the rule. He plays the time of the segments. He'll sit there condescendingly. He'll smirk. He'll cut other people off. And then he'll lie and just hope that everyone moves on due to the time limitations of the segment. And I said, fuck that. If you're not going to play by the rules, I'm not either. I'm going to sit there and try to get a direct answer from you. So I asked him multiple times, name one concession we've gotten from this war. I'm like, maybe I was gesticulating a bit much, but he absolutely felt cornered, and he said, get your fucking hand out of my face. I thought he was going to strike me. I thought he was going to cry in that moment. And, you know, in the commercial break right there, I tweeted out, like, what did I say? I was like, I literally think he's about to cry sitting next to me. And it got like 2 million views. So maybe there's a little condescension right there.
Is that, yeah. No, I don't know if that's sort of just sort of bitchy.
A little bitchy. Yeah, well, okay, well, there's another one. Uh-huh. Brendan Carr responded to the clip as it was going viral and said, actually, you can say fuck on TV, so I don't care about this. The FCC chair. And I was like, well, can you show a pussy on TV? Because I think CNN just did that. And
that's good. Got him. Got him.
They still invited me back on.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, of course they invited you back on. Yeah. Hey, should we have the guy from that viral altercation that everyone's talking about? No, we don't want that. No more viewers here at CNN. We're all set on viewers. Too many viewers this week, we said. Let's not gild the lily. I want to talk about like sort of what it meant to be part of, you know, Gen Z growing up on YouTube, and now, and that is sort of the water you swim in. It's a lot of talk about the ways in which this generation is, in some cases, you know, some parts of it are, you know, further to the left. There's also a lot of disaffected people that have gone in the direction of sort of the Andrew Tates. First of all, does the fact that some of these Manosphere figures are like kind of being exposed, does that do anything to kind of change kind of the role, these sort of, I don't know what you'd call them, like these influencers who act like kind of gurus, the place they have, are people shaken loose from this?
I think they are, but due to a lot of factors beyond the fact that the Tate brothers have been arrested. If people don't know, the Tate brothers are sitting in a Florida prison right now, about to be extradited to the United Kingdom. Yeah, clap, thankfully, for human trafficking, sex trafficking, rape charges, child sexual abuse material charges, like disgusting stuff. In the court filings, their lawyer is now exposing them and saying that they were renting a lot of their vehicles, their Bugattis, their Aston Martins. I made a video about this and I confused Bugatti with Aston Martin and I got emails for days. Don't do that.
It's funny. It's like it's sort of like if you're saying that you want gun control, but you accidentally mischaracterize a certain kind of weapon and then you'll be kind of vilified by by gun people. But it's that for the people that care about the difference between a Bugatti and an Aston Martin.
I was like, I've never ridden in either. I don't know. But the point is, Andrew Tate is being exposed brutally by his own team because they're desperately trying to prevent extradition. Trump actually helped him get out of Romania, out of the investigation, and come back to the United States in February of 2025 because Paul Ingrassia, Barron Trump, and a lot of people around him were lobbying for this. There are many reports about this in the New York Times. So I do think a lot of the Tate's loyal fan base is beginning to shake. But when it comes to young men and anti-socialization, do you want me to jump in?
Do it.
I think it speaks to a broader problem of a few things combining. Right now, algorithms are uniquely radicalizing young people. You have Elon Musk, who owns X, and X is like Nazi Germany right now. Like Elon Musk himself will be tweeting fake crime statistics about Black Americans, about trans Americans, about immigrants. So he's radicalizing people en masse. We have foreign actors, think like Russia, Iran, China. They want to weaken social cohesion by radicalizing young people. You combine that with the anti-socialization of many young people, like they're not smoking, drinking, having sex as much. I am. I'm doing all this.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You're cool. Everyone knows you're cool.
Cool.
And I get it. I see it. I feel it. I know it.
Okay, thanks. I'm pretending to be. Be careful to be something you're not. Okay, so the reality is, COVID fucked with a lot of young people's brains. I was rather antisocial during COVID. I put a bubble up around myself and wasn't speaking to many people. And I had to intentionally tear that bubble down after and start dating again, start hanging out with friends. Many young people didn't do that. They got deeper into their bubble. They got deeper into these algorithms. They're online all of the time with a lack of socialization. And you could even point to Tyler Robinson, someone like that, the guy who killed Charlie Kirk. He was deep in these algorithms. He was deeply radicalized and antisocial. And it kind of is a bad combination. So I think there's this reductive analysis by Republicans where they're like, all young people are studying Karl Marx now. No, it's not really that. People just want change. People feel disillusioned with the current systems and they're looking for something different. And it shouldn't be Andrew Tate because...
Yeah, no, and I do think, too, like there is this effort in the wake of some kind of mass violence or acts of sort of directed violence, whether it's a mass shooting or an assassination or assassination attempt, there's this immediate effort to go comb through the record to figure out, well, what was their claim to the justification? Why did they do this? Why are they saying they did this? And everyone is looking and hoping that it doesn't kind of redound to a criticism of their side, that they're not on their team, right? But then, like, that is such a, and I get the impulse, right? But really, like, people I think would be uncomfortable to link Tyler Robinson with Luigi Mangione. They would. There's a lot of people that would hear this and people that I think would view that as some, like, whatever, like sort of unfair. But what links people that do mass shootings or targeted assassinations is first of all, being radicalized online most of the time now, and desiring to go out in some kind of blaze of glory, right? And if you see it as that pathway, in the end, like, yes, of course it matters if the president is stoking violence. Of course it matters if, as a society, we are not rejecting a politics in which we can justify or defend cruel, violent behavior. And it matters who's doing it. But if you look beneath that, right, like that pathway is the danger, right? It's what the tech and the platforms allow people to become.
And you even see it in less radical ways. It's not always just murder. Mike Collins has a staffer in Georgia who literally posted a swastika made out of the word twink, right? You guys were talking about that. And I mean, that is a very, very good example of a young dude, a young staffer who's radicalized. Paul Ingracia, who works for the Trump administration, has leaked texts where he says he has a Nazi streak in him. So there's all these examples beyond just Tyler Robinson and Luigi Mangione. There was somebody who shot up a Colorado school the same day Charlie Kirk was murdered, and he killed multiple people. He was a young dude who was radicalized on forums, on 4chan, and it's a very real problem. And we have insidious actors in power right now, people like Elon Musk, who worse than this. I do think Trump in a top-down way just makes everything more volatile, but there is something to be said about young people just feeling broadly disillusioned. And you know what the worst part is? Some of the bad faith actors who take advantage of that are like Andrew and Tristan Tate. They're like, you know what we can do? We can act like we have Bugattis. That's how they say it, Bugattis. Mm. We can act like we have those, and then we can trick young men into buying our course and then just sell hatred for women. So it's pretty insidious, right?
Yeah, it's not good. And look, I just want to say, as someone who has a Bugatti, it makes you happy. It's so fun. I love my Bugatti.
I'm going to put a flock camera right outside it and just watch your
That's
Bugatti.
Fine. I'm not doing anything wrong. Okay. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm flock and God can watch everything I do in my Bugatti, which I have. Inspired by your thoughtful consideration of the male loneliness epidemic, we want to close out our combo with, in a completely thoughtless lightning round, we're calling, is this man lonely? I will name a man. You tell me, gut reaction. Lonely? Here we go. First up, Pete Hegseth.
No, he's got a bottle of whiskey with him all the time. I feel like you can never be lonely with a bottle of whiskey, right?
He's got the captain. He's got Jack. You know, he's got Jack
not
Daniels.
Lonely.
Yeah.
I feel like, are you just gonna put a photo of me on screen one of these times?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's Adam Mockler. Lonely?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
My girlfriend's back there. She's somewhere back there.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You're definitely pointing at a person for sure.
Yeah. She goes.
Yeah, you're not just pointing at a sort of a diffuse area of the studio. No. There's a real woman back there who is your girlfriend. I believe you. You're good.
She goes to a different school.
Yeah, she goes to not lonely. JD Vance.
You know, despite being surrounded by staffers and like-minded people all the time, there's got to be something pretty isolating to selling out your soul and becoming a skin suit for MAGA.
Yeah,
so lonely.
I think so too. You know that thing if you're like at a loud restaurant or party or bar and you go into the bathroom and there's a buzzing quiet? I imagine that's around J.D. Vance a lot of the time.
Yeah,
That buzzing super quiet? Yeah, lonely.
There's this Mac Miller quote. He's like, I've got problems as big as my house. And it's basically talking about the more successful he got, the more lonely he got. That's a lot of these people right there.
God, I don't want to... I was feeling that in my Bugatti the other day.
Yeah.
I was like, is this what it's all for? Yeah, it's awesome. I love this Bugatti and how fast it goes and how low to the ground I am. I don't know.
You definitely know Bugattis.
Chuck Schumer.
Oh, man.
I think he's more lonely in politics than in life.
Yeah, that's actually where I was going with it.
Yeah,
right? He's kind of on an island right now. Him and Jeffries are kind of just going through it. I think Jeffries has a self-inflicted sort of wound right now in the form of the Kushner meeting. Schumer, I think he would have been a great operator in like 2010 or maybe like 1810 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, somewhere,
but
yeah.
I think right now in 2026, he's not meeting the moment.
Yeah. So you sort of agree with the kind of, I don't know, online left, broad left view that it was wrong for Hakeem Jeffries to meet with Jared Kushner?
Listen, it's nuanced. I can understand meeting with the other side about affordability issues and trying to talk to the other side and sit down. Like, I can understand how this is something that happens in politics. However, Jeffries is already pissed off a lot of Democratic voters. He's already seen as weak by the base. Like, time and time again, he has been seen as too soft on this type of stuff. So while I do understand that meetings can happen with the other side, you can't just recklessly go out there and be like, yep, I met with Kushner. Is Kushner even a part of the, is even like an official part of the administration?
He is not an official part of the administration.
It feels a little bit odd. So I understand why someone could meet, but this just isn't, no.
Yeah, I think the problem is not that he met with Jared Kushner. It's that he is not the politician that has done that has become for people that are meant to be his supporters, someone who could meet with Kushner and they'd be like, cool, you give him a what for, you know? He hasn't done that part of it. That's the problem.
Mamdani met with Trump in the Oval Office, even off the record for a bit, and nobody really had a problem because we knew that Mamdani was assertive. He was likely on message. With Jeffries, he hasn't proven that we should be confident in his ability to do that.
Yeah. Let's do RFK Jr.
I think, no, he's not lonely. He's surrounded by an array of animals at any moment that he's going to slice open or put in the trunk of his car.
Absolutely. Yeah. Next up, Brian Johnson, the longevity guy.
Oh, you know what? No, I hope this guy is not lonely. Something about his relationship with his girlfriend is really funny. His wife, he's always tweeting about her. My girlfriend and I always quote this because there was this one tweet. He's like, it's been 5 days without her. She needs a shower to wash off the dirtied world around her. I miss her so much. And I swear I'm not making this up. He also is always talking about the vaginal microbiome of her. That's the guy, right?
Yeah. We're saying not lonely.
He's got all the bacteria to hang out with.
Yeah, he's got the right flora, the right fauna, all of it. Well, RFK Jr. has the right fauna, and this guy's got the right flora. All right. And finally, Ray from Girls.
Bro, who slipped this guy in here? I don't know.
Hallie really wanted us to talk about whether or not Ray from Girls is lonely.
No, he reminds me a little bit of myself. From this photo. So I'd like to think no.
Okay, we're going to say no. We're going to say not lonely.
Wait,
good for Ray.
What's his character type?
I would say that he's definitely ornery. I would say needy, kind of obstinate. I think at times lonely. It sort of depends on the season. Depends on the season of HBO's Girls. Thank you, Adam Mogler. Check out the Adam Mogler debate show. We didn't even talk about all your debates on YouTube and at Adam Mogler on socials. And we'll be right back with Sonam Obsessian. Obsessed.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.